Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, if that's all it took, I'm calling you. I wouldn't have to say anything. Got a problem, situation can't handle, just call me. I'll let you sit on the phone for 1 minute of silence, and that should take care of it. Very nice to be with you. I'm Dr. Ray Grendy. The program here is The Doctor Is In. I was talking to Andrew Krucek, my producer man over there in Ann Arbor. Eric Dumont, call screamer, is not in today, which means Andrew has to handle the board. He has to set up the interstitials in between the program. He has to keep track of the clock. He has to record. So he made a polite request. I'm not sure I can handle it. I'm not sure the folks at Ave or EWTM would like it. He said, just don't give out the number. I said, that won't work. People have that number. It's an emergency number. It's right there in the refrigerator, bathroom mirror, toilet. It's there in the car. So I might as well just give it out. 877-57-EQUAL. Sorry, Andrew. 877-573-7825. Should you have a question, a comment, a particular question, something in your life that matters to you about a kid, relationship, something you don't understand about psychology or emotions or intellect, development, culture. I never thought when I was in grad school I would have to spend so much time on the interface between culture and psychology. But so many people now come to me struggling with what the culture is doing to their faith, to their willingness to just quietly live a moral life. The culture intrudes. And as a matter of fact, many of the questions I now get from parents in particular are dealing with the radical lightning speed shifts in the culture amorality. 877-573-7825. I want to thank the folks at St. Mary's in North Utica, Illinois. Thank you so very much for coming out. If I recall, as I was driving into town, it said North Utica, population 1,352. It's Mayberry. It's Mayberry there. It's kind of southwest of Chicago. I got up this morning, 3 a.m. Central Time, and drove in here, 456 miles from where I was. And on top of that, three of my grandchildren are at the house, and they don't make me feel old. When I realize that I'm married to a grandmother, that does. But I'm here with you because I wanted to be here. I had to miss a couple days last week doing a little traveling. Ricky Nelson, I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops. I'm making a lot more stops these days, just stopping, sitting down. 877-57-EQUAL. I was on the show with Teresa Tomio, T, as she is affectionately called by those of us Italians, on Monday. And T was flummoxed, upset, confused about what went on at the Paris Olympics in the opening ceremony. To say it was bizarre would be kind. It was vicious. It was vile. It was Well, you know, I've heard people say blasphemous. I wrestled with that word because I don't know if it's blasphemous to them because they don't care. It would be blasphemous to us, and maybe somebody theologically can correct me on the definition of blasphemous. But to them, oh, that's just in your face, Christians. And T and I were talking a little bit about why that might be. If you know anything historically, any radical changes in a culture or a society, especially as the government, the rulers, however they might be the form of the particular ruling junta, the first thing they did is go after the Christians. Now, why would this be? Christians. I mean, if we live our faith, we're the best citizens you could have. We don't break laws. Not like people who don't believe. I think the stats are pretty clear on that. Can't argue with that. We tend to live our lives rather quietly. We don't really bother so much other people, at least not as the general amorality that can run amok in a culture does. Of course, we're not walking morals, but at the same time, it was like one civil rights leader said, he said, it saddens me, but if I'm walking in certain neighborhoods and I see a group of young men approaching me at night, I would feel much more comfortable if they had a Bible under their arms. So why? I think part of it's fear. It is fear. Look what Christianity did to the Roman Empire. It helped in its collapse. In its quiet, relentless way of life. The Roman Empire, the pagan Roman Empire, went down. Now, it took it several hundred years to reach its peak and then come down, but that's because it didn't have technology like we do. We can influence millions of people at a time. What is it about Christianity that is so fearful and that people have to absolutely attack it? They can't simply say, you know, you people are goofy. You people got these ideas about this Jesus who you think was God. And you think that somehow, some way that this supreme being created the universe and it wasn't hydrogen in the beginning? What are you talking about? Why can't they just say, you're among the most goofy, but hey, generally you're harmless. They don't. We're a threat. Why would that be? Because our allegiance is not to government. Our allegiance, first and foremost, is not to the ruling class. It's to something much higher. So that in and of itself is a threat. But there's another one. We live in a time, especially the Western societies, radical sexual liberty. I want to do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want, with whomever I want, at any time. Even though the research, the secular research, is overwhelming, that's a bad way to live. It takes you down in a lot of ways. Nonetheless, Christianity, with its moral system, is a threat. You know why else? I had a relative say this to me once, years ago. She was about 20. She's older now. She's 30. What one would consider politically on the far left, also an atheist. Sometimes the two go together. And she said, you and Aunt Randy are the most judgmental people I know. And I thought to myself, we've never said anything about the way she lives, about what she does. We never said anything. Then it hit me. And this is partly why people accuse you of being judgmental. why they accuse Christians of being judgmental. We know how you think, is their mindset. You see, it's no longer enough to not say things that sound judgmental. You can't think things that sound judgmental. If someone sees the way you live, if they know your standards, in and of itself, that is judgmental. I remember once my wife asked me, she was coming to her Christian roots, and she said, Ray, can we play down Santa Claus and just focus on our Lord's birth? I said, well, yeah, sure, okay. Look, I do what my wife says, and I don't get hurt. There was a local newspaper who wanted to interview me about something. And they happened to ask as part of the interview, so you're getting all geared up for Santa Claus? I don't know how the topic flipped around, but it came out that my wife and I were Christians, and we were going to really focus on our Lord as the gift. And Santa Claus would be a nice story. Well, that was the theme of the article. And multiple people commented how that's taking away childhood. It's hurting the kids. It's breaking up a dream. And I thought to myself, why can't you just allow us to do it our way? Why do you have to be so hostile toward a decision that we made? You can say you think it's dumb. You can say it makes no sense. But why do you have to say don't think like that? And I think that's part of what's going on with this relentless societal, psychological, emotional, and in the case of places like Paris, blatant assaults on Christianity. We know how you think. And that's just too much to accept. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get onto the program. You will speak to Andrew Krucek, producer man, and now doubling as call screamer.
Mother and Unborn Baby Care, a pro-life pregnancy resource center in Southfield, seeks a dynamic client services assistant to join their staff, providing vulnerable moms and babies with life-affirming options. To learn more about this fulfilling position on their Christ Center team, call 248-559-7576 or visit maubc.org. The rewards are out of this world. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, I'm Max Peter, host of Ave Maria in the Afternoon and Unveiling the Covenants. Thank you to all of you who participated in our last pledge drive. If you haven't made your pledge yet, it's still not too late. Every penny counts and we need your support. We're not taking calls, but you can go online to AveMariaRadio.net to make your pledge of support. Remember, your contributions have eternal value as they go toward building the kingdom of God for the salvation of souls. Thank you for supporting us.
Historic Sweetest Heart of Mary Church presents A Day with the Saints to venerate over 100 first-class relics, including the True Cross, the Holy Manger, Mary's Veil, and the 12 Apostles. It begins Sunday, November 3rd at 10 a.m. Mass until 4 p.m. The church is in Detroit at the corner of Russell and Canfield, just north of Eastern Market. For more information, visit motherofdivinemercy.org or the Mother of Divine Mercy's Facebook page.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You're not fit yet.
Not fit. I'm the doctor.
No, Doctor. I'm the doctor, and I say that you're not fit.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
I have found that the years between 50 and 70 are the hardest. You're always being asked to do things, but yet you're not old enough to turn them down. Been noticing that. Yeah, I'm tired. You know, your age shouldn't be tired. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. Fargo, North Dakota, where we will, God willing, in October, be heading to tape 4 episodes of the TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray. Michael, we're going to put out the word there shortly here in Fargo to get folks to come to be in the live audience. I hope you can make it. That silence is an assent or negation. Hello. That you'll make it. You're on air, Michael. Be careful what you say. You have a right to remain silent.
Anything
you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney, should you so choose to have one. If you do not have the money for an attorney, one will be provided for you. How's that?
Thanks for the advice.
I've watched all those crime shows. I know that stuff. What's going on?
I am just curious, looking for some guidance. I have diagnosed depression. It's treatable. My wife has diagnosed bipolar, also treatable. We have some kids. I am just wondering if there is a guideline age that we should bring this up to them, that it's potentially genetic and that they could have such things, or should there just be certain things we should watch out for, and then go kind of, rather than going off of a hard number, go off of kind of just developmental.
Well, yeah, I think there are some things you should watch out for, Michael. The thing to watch out for is that you don't overinterpret your kids' behavior as a sign that they're following in mommy and daddy's footsteps. That's the first thing you got to watch out for.
Okay.
If you are stable, and your wife is stable, and these diagnoses are not biochemically related, but in fact, yours may be a life type of depression, and even your wife's, it may be a fluctuating move kind of thing that was diagnosed as bipolar, then in fact, what you do is be the best parent you can be, and you don't worry about the fact that, well, I've got these labels here, and I wonder if the kids should know about these labels. The second thing is this. Let's assume that your depression, your temperament, your wife's, is genetically, biochemically based. Do you know what the word concordance means?
I have a general idea.
Yeah. It's the percentage likelihood that your kids will inherit a predisposition to those disorders. The percentage likelihood for bipolar, and particularly for depression, if in fact it's not a biochemically based depression, is very low. It's very low. Even psychosis, which is a much more biochemically based disorder than depression often is, or even bipolar often is relatively, I think if I remember my concordance rates, like 10 to 15% chance, something like that. So all that said means that I'm not sure that your kids need to know this. They just look at mommy and daddy, and if mommy and daddy are a good, stable adult figure in their homes, those names might just confuse them. Now, on the other hand, let's say that, you know, bipolar, let's say that your wife has certain manic episodes. She's circular in her disorder. And when she gets on the manic side, she can become a little irrational. She can become grandiose. She can have behavior that's really hard to explain. It would be very much out of character when your kids would see her. At that point, you can explain. But you don't have to say, you know, you guys, you have to realize, and since mom's like that, you got a chance to be like that too. I wouldn't do that. Wouldn't do that at all, because the chances, as I said, are low, and it would just unnecessarily, perhaps, make them nervous. Now, your question, what should you watch out for? Well, at this point, likely nothing. You just look at your kids as they're growing up, and you see if something comes up that you have to deal with or you have to explore. But short of that, you don't say, oh no, look what she's doing. I knew it. She's 13 years old. Now it's kicking in. That might be stretching it, Michael. So what is your impression of everything I just said to you?
That's kind of what I was thinking. Just if the issue comes up, address it then, but otherwise don't be too concerned. Not negligent, but just not hovering, not overly burdensome about it.
Yeah, especially, my friend, if you don't really manifest any signs of the depression or the bipolar as you're raising the kids. It'd be tantamount. I have a friend who, when he was younger, was heavy alcoholic. Heavy. And he has been without alcohol for 20 years, 30 years. And he raised a couple of kids, three kids. Now, alcoholism does seem to have a genetic component, okay, roughly 20-25%. However, during the time he was raising those kids, he was completely sober. So they knew his history, but it never entered into how he was raising them. Now, if you say, yeah, but what if they start experimenting with alcohol, et cetera, at that point, he might bring that up. He might say, hey, guys, for whatever the reason, I may have had a genetic predisposition to misuse alcohol. So I don't know how that's affecting you, but it's something to keep in mind if you're going to, in fact, when you're old enough, get carried away with this. But in the meantime, he never brought it up. I mean, they knew his history, but he just raised the kids, and as far as I know, none of them have any problems with alcohol.
Great. Well, thanks for the advice.
You're welcome, Michael. Take good care. Years ago, I went to Fargo. Well, actually, it wasn't that many years. I've been there a number of times. It's Real Presence Radio. It's a wonderful network up there. They have some of the biggest pledge banquets you've ever seen. I was there, and it was 2020. It was March of 2020. Now, if that rings a bell to you, that was the onset of COVID. But we didn't really know then what was going on. We knew something was happening. And I had been on the Good News Marriage cruise and later came down quite ill. When I went to the banquet for Real Presence, I wasn't running a fever, but I was pretty much hoarse. I had never really been hoarse in my life, never lost my voice. And that talk, I did. I was really scratchy. It's hard. And it turned out about a week later, I got diagnosed with what appeared to be COVID. They didn't diagnose it as COVID at that time. They just said it was an upper respiratory infection. It's not the flu. We don't know what it is. Well, I was in North Dakota shaking hands with everybody and their brother and their sister. Fortunately, we've since found out it's really not all that contagious by contact. All those years we spent wiping down everything. I wiped down my head of lettuce. It's airborne. But I remember thinking about that. I said, I was there, and I probably had COVID. And I was there at the book table, smiling, laughing, carrying on. Don't know how much I was sneezing, though. 877-573-7825. That's the number to call. Bottom of the hour already, but we still have a lot of time. So I'd like to hear from you. Question about something in your life? Comment on something. Generic question about what our culture's doing to you.
Hey! You're listening to the least worst of the Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarani. He's got no bad stuff, so please, no calls at this time.
Hey, we got some congratulations going out. KHRA 94.1 FM, Anchorage, Alaska. 9 years on the EWTN radio network. Congratulations to Glenn and Brian. Nice group up there. And when I was in Anchorage, I think I was, it's kind of like Fargo. Actually, Fargo is sort of toward the south there. But I was in Fargo, and then the time I was there, it was minus 40 degrees wind chill. And I was in awe of the people. Went to the hotel room, looking downtown, and I saw this lady, had to be 60, 70, 80 years old, walking downtown. Not homeless. No gloves. And basically a windbreaker. Incredible. We have an anonymous caller from an anonymous location. But I've always noticed that when we have anonymous callers from anonymous location, they never ask me an anonymous question. It's always a specific question. And they know who I am. It's kind of unfair that I don't know who they are. Nevertheless. Hi, anonymous. How are you?
Hello. Very good, doctor.
Thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you. I am wondering what your opinion is about genetic testing. This last weekend we had a family reunion, and a sister-in-law divulged that the person that her mother worked for she had three children with that man, and the sister-in-law didn't know until she did some genetic testing. The parents are both dead now. The person that was a father is also dead. But I'm just wondering, it was very disturbing for her at first, and then it seemed like, you know, just, I'm just wondering what your opinion is about genetic testing.
What is a simple rule of thumb, I think, here?
Okay.
Don't do it if you can't take the results.
Okay.
A lot of these companies will say,
okay,
you might be surprised at what you might find.
Okay.
Now, most of the time, okay, people go in there thinking, I just want to see my roots. You know, was I from Central Europe, and what percentage of that? And maybe there's a percentage of me that was from Nigeria, whatever. And then they find out, let's see, my mom was English, and my dad was Irish. Where did I get this 52% Spanish from?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Initially, I thought you were going to ask about genetic testing to find out what might be a predisposition in the baby in the womb. And I thought, wow, why would you do that?
Am I saying that right?
It's
called genetic testing.
Sure.
When you send in your DNA?
Yeah, well, that and or you can genetic test, for example, the baby in the womb. And you can find out the chance for trisomy 21. And by the way, interestingly enough, just as an aside light, my dear, trisomy 21, commonly known as Down's syndrome,
right,
is the number one reason genetically for abortion now. There are
my understanding is Iceland has gotten rid of all.
Yes,
they don't have any Down syndrome children.
From what I understand, too. Yeah, basically saying you're deficient, and therefore we don't want you as this inconvenience or perhaps heartache, and therefore we're going to end this. So in that case, now I can see some parents saying, okay, we had a child with severe complications of this type. let's find out what the chances are for a second child with severe complications of this type. And let's say they're 50%. Okay, both parents are carriers, not major carriers, but they are, in fact, the genetic word for it is slipping my mind these days. So they might say, well, this is a very, very serious illness. It's perhaps shortens life. We may plan our family according to natural family planning on this. I can see that. Okay. However, I have a relative, a close relative, who found out that her mom was her mom, of course. It's a lot harder to fake a mom. But,
exactly.
But dad wasn't. Yeah, dad wasn't. And she found this out. And a couple of things. This is a woman of deep faith. And she didn't blame her mother. She didn't look at her mother and say, how could you? How dare you? I can't believe this. You're not the woman I thought you were. None of that. None of that. She looked at her mother, and she recognized the frailty, the humanness of it all. And her mother never found out that she knew, by the way. Mother had passed away prior to that.
Oh, okay.
Mother never found out. And she viewed it as, the man who raised me was my father. He was my father. Okay. In every sense of the word, except the donation of his cell. So given that, she handled it very well. Very, very well. But some people...
Doctor, may I ask a side question?
Sure.
Or more of a comment? The people with IVF in vitro fertilization, totally different subject, I know, but I just wanted to comment. I wonder if people today know about how many babies are thrown away, destroyed, just because they want one. I have a feeling that a lot of people that do IVF have no clue.
I wouldn't think that a lot wouldn't, because the doctors who do this explain.
Okay.
For the most part. They're going to tell you, we're going to fertilize multiple eggs. We're going to implant those that we think, and this is why a higher percentage of twins are born in implantation. However, and here's the sad part of it, I think. Don't call me skeptical. Call me a realist. I think that most people wouldn't care.
I wonder if that is true.
Their view is, I would like a child. I deserve a child. I want a child. And therefore, these fertilized eggs that are going to be stored and perhaps discarded or used for some kind of research, they're not really babies, and that's the mindset they swallow. And therefore, this is perfectly okay. I would think it'd be just a very, very small percentage of people who would say, wow, I didn't realize that somewhere I have seven very, very, very young children sitting in deep freeze. Beautiful questions. Thank you, my dear. You call back anonymously anytime. This is Dr. Ray, 877-57-EQUAL. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. I have a dear listener friend down in Columbus, Will, and he always texts me, and of course he helped me. I was thinking of the word recessive gene as opposed to dominant gene. Well, I knew that. I just forgot it. I hope I got your name right. Okay, speaking of, we got a couple questions up there that are related to the culture. One distinctly regarding how to help children navigate this. And Frank from Bucks County, PA. That's a manly-sounding county. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Pretty good, sir. Pretty good. Yourself?
Pretty good, thanks. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and I just wanted to be quick and just say, I wrote this down, so ever since I can remember, my parents and my school teachers talked about consequences to our decisions. As we grow up, our decisions are even more have even more consequences. How does cultural pressures have an effect on our decisions? Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Well, thank you, Frank. You're going to hang up or you're going to hang around?
Oh, no, I'll hang around, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Human beings are incredibly susceptible to social influence. Absolutely. The word, the phrase is social norming. Whatever around us or whatever the dominant culture says is good and normal, human beings are influenced. And it takes an awful lot of moral strength to resist it. So I think where you're coming across this is that many people make decisions that are not in their best interests about morality because the culture says it's okay. And then they get bit. So once upon a time, at least in our culture, there was a consensus, a bit of a moral consensus, at least more than today, about what is morally good and what is morally bad. Well, that's pretty much eroding. So as a result, there's a lot of kids, teens, that do things that the culture says, it's all right, everybody does it. Small example of this, although big in its implications. In 1992, 30 years ago, approximately 1 million people admitted to smoking marijuana regularly. In 2022, do you know what that statistic is? Take a guess, Frank. You there? You know what the statistic is?
I think it's double.
Well, it would be nice if it was double.
Oh.
It's 18 million.
Wow. Oh, that's triple.
that's approximately 1,900%.
Yeah.
So given that, those kinds of cultural moves very much make people make decisions that are against their individual best interests. It happens all the time.
Okay.
Happens all the time. For example, I'll give you another statistic. What percentage, according to some surveys, of people enter marriage as virgins?
Oh, 50%.
Ah! Frank, you have a lot of faith in humanity. It's 3.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you see what I mean about the culture saying, this is okay, that's okay, this is normal, that's right. And people make decisions on that basis, a lot of basis. That's how many people guide their actions. And if you don't have a moral system predicated in a supreme being, it's your own, quote-unquote, your own moral system, you're easily influenced. I, Ray Guarendi, can easily give in to someone who says, no, this is okay, as long as it's my moral system. But if it's God's moral system, much harder for me to give in, especially if I embrace that system. So, Frank,
wow.
you put your finger on a major influence in people making consequential decisions that in the end damage them psychologically, socially, morally, maritally, physically, absolutely.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Ray. I just wanted to add that with your work in the mental health field, you are able to give good influence to people that do make bad decisions.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. But you should see I have a teleprompter here, so I'm just kind of the voice, and somebody else gives this, and I read the teleprompter.
Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, Frank, I'll talk to you. All right, good questions up there. One regarding the culture, one regarding anxiety, which is something I'm working on right now, a book on anxiety. So I'll take the break, and then I'm going to take these calls when I come back. Thank you.
The doctor is in. Now, don't you feel better?
Divine Child is proud to be one of Michigan's largest Catholic co-ed high schools.
We offer 40 honors and advanced placement courses,
a comprehensive instructional support program,
over 50 teams in 27 championship sports,
nationally recognized arts and competitive STEM and robotics programs.
Most importantly, our faith formation programs ensure we put our faith into action.
See what it's like to be a Falcon.
Join us on Sunday, November 3rd for our open house.
Visit DivineChildHighSchool.org for more information.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In the eighth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius encourages us to be patient in an experience of spiritual desolation. What type of patience is St. Ignatius inviting us to? He writes in Rule 8, "Let one who is in desolation work to be in patience, which is contrary to the vexations which come to him." St. Ignatius understood the very real struggle within the human heart to be patient while experiencing the trial of spiritual desolation, an experience that can cause us to doubt God's plan of loving goodness for us. St. Ignatius invites us to a patient endurance during spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "A faithful patience that will not surrender in time of trial, but which actively and courageously perseveres until the trial passes and peace of heart returns."
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
The Doctor is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi will commence now. We assure you that this randomly selected program is one of Dr. Ray's least worst.
Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarendi, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Website, DrRay.com, DRRAY.com. All 17 books are listed there. They are signed, and shipping is very low. My wife handles it. So keep her busy. Back when we had the 10 kids at home, I don't know what she did for a living. But finally, she's doing some, I told her. Gee, it's about time. Hid behind those 10 children. Okay, you quote me, I'll deny I said anything. I was talking to a priest. He was the chaplain for a high school. And he said, when the kids were together in a group, they heavily endorsed approval of transgender expression. He said, when I got them alone, it was the reverse. When they were in the group, the social pressure, the social influence to either not say anything at all or to approve and celebrate because they expected that's what they are supposed to do, because they've been told that relentlessly by the intelligentsia and the wisdom of the people who shape the way so many of us think, they express that. Now, Michelle from Indiana kind of has a similar situation. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Tell us about going to Mass and this particular congregant.
Well, let me start by saying I'm Protestant. So,
oh, okay.
It's a Protestant church.
Going to service
but, yeah,
in this particular...
I'm your biggest Protestant fan.
Well, thank you, my dear. You know, Michelle, I didn't know you were Protestant, or I would put you in our Protestant line. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have got to you for, I don't know, 8 or 10 calls or something, but you snuck through, and that's okay.
I was just saying, is that like the back of the bus, right?
Yeah, no offense there, my dear. Thank you for calling. Of course not. So you got somebody coming in who's cross-dressing.
Yes. Not only does he cross-dress, but one of my daughters showed me on his Facebook page that he's also in a a polyamorous relationship.
Oh, okay.
Now, thankfully, he doesn't, they aren't coming with him, but yeah, he's coming weekly dressed like a woman, and it's quite obvious that he's not a woman. And
the beard,
I mean,
gives
my
it
children,
away.
We it might as well be. We homeschool, so we don't have, you know, that issue with, you know, the public school kids, you know, trying to influence my children and what they believe. And most of them are teens. My youngest is 9, so most of them are teens. And they know we're really open about this sort of thing. We talk about the cultural issues a lot. But so I'm not necessarily concerned that they're all of a sudden going to think it's okay, but I worry about the, what they think about, you know, why are Christians being okay with this? Why is our church all right with this? Well, you know, why don't they at least ask him to dress like a man when he comes to church? That sort of thing.
Well, that's easily enough explained. But let's take a step back for a moment. I would ask your teens in particular, but you could even do this with a 9-year-old. What do you think is going on, guys? Well, I don't know, Mom. He seems kind of confused about who he is. Okay, could be. Why do you think he dresses like that and comes to church? What do you think he's trying to say? And I think you'll probably be surprised, Michelle, at some of the insights of your kids. They might say, well, Mom, I think he's trying to say that you just need to accept me as I am. And you Christians need to quit being judgmental, and don't be upset, because if you're upset about any of this, you got a problem. Something. I bet they say something along those lines. Okay, so it's showing you that your kids, without looking at the man like he's a piece of doggy do, are simply saying,
right,
well, he's got his motives. We don't quite know what they are. We can speculate. But what does seem to be clear is that he is saying something about doing this. All right, got that part. Now, the part about them, okay, what was that? What was the second part? You had a second question there. You said,
just wondering how they're going to look at the church and at the Christians in the church, and why they're accepting this.
Okay. Well, first of all, we don't know they're accepting it. I think it goes back to
that
initial remark I made, which is people are sheep-like. And they would be much more likely to either keep their mouth shut, not say anything, or simply view it as, hey, okay, he's a son of the Lord, well, a child of God, and therefore we're not going to ostracize him. We're not going to tell him he's not welcome. And I think that's somewhat legit, in the sense that if he were having, say, an adulterous relationship and he came to church, that would be every bit as wrong. However, it would be lower profile. Nobody would know unless a few people know. But the kids see.
Right.
The kids look at this and go, okay, what is going on here? I would tell the kids, why do you think that people are not saying anything to him? And I think you get a range of responses. Well, they don't want to be judgmental. Well, they don't want to confront him because he may never come back, and we want him at least coming to church, and maybe that'll change his mind about some of this. Well, I think more people are bothered by it than would ever say anything, but because if they did, they would feel they're the only ones, because they're like you, Mom, and they're all wondering, why isn't anybody bothered by this? So I think you would have that as your explanations. I think you can use that, as the shrinks would say, a teachable moment, which is,
right,
hey guys, I think what you're witnessing is that people nowadays with certain kinds of behaviors are very reluctant to say anything. And those behaviors are usually in the sexual realm or related to gender identity.
Yes.
They really are. And besides, here's the other thing too, Michelle. What would they say? What would anybody say? I mean, they could say, you know, you're confusing these little kids. And that's legitimate. That's fair.
Exactly.
That's fair.
Yes.
Why do you think the pastor isn't saying anything?
Well, I could make a guess, but I would hate to. I don't want to slander, but I feel, you know, I mean, I think I probably know why. But it's really odd because I live in a pretty small town, and it's, rural Indiana. It's just kind of shocking. And obviously if I felt like I don't know, and I never will, but that he's there because he's feeling convicted and he wants to repent and, amen. But I still feel like someone should say, you need to come dressed as a man though. And you need to use the men's bathroom.
He's using a woman's bathroom?
Well, I don't know. I've not seen him use the women's bathroom, but I'm a little concerned because my daughter, she's 9 years old.
That would definitely raise the issue. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
If you're going to say something, you can say, please, I'm curious. I understand that you want to dress like this, but why in church? What's your reasoning?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he may look at you with hostility. Who are you to question me? He may do that.
Right.
Or he may say, I need to have people understand that everybody's different and we have to have tolerance for everyone. And you could say legitimately, well, what about children? What about a six-year-old who's confused by this? What about that? You really have to kind of probably weigh his motives. Michelle, thank you. Thank you for being my number one fan, my number one Christian fan. Thank you, dear. Pietro, you call back because we will. Definitely, that's a great question. Great question. Walk with God. Always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.